and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for November 10th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and back in Fukuoka having a good time is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Yes. Well, I'm back in Fukuoka, and I'm having a good time.
I would imagine.
I was going to top that.
I was going to say, I'm assuming you're having a good time because you're in Fukuoka.
Well, I'm here covering the Japanese national team as they get ready to play the Major League All-Stars. And, you know, that's really great because, you know, I got to see a bunch of guys. But, you know, it's funny because when you see them, you know, the national team duds, they don't look like the same guys. You know, yesterday they were bringing the players in for press time and some of them were wearing suits. And
egads.
I know. Well, that's fine. I find, you know, if it's a guy I see a lot and I talk to a lot, then no problem. But if it's like Genji Sumitani, Genji Akuminai. I'm going like, who's that guy? Because, you know, we have these clues. You know, we know who the players we don't see every day play are because of some physical characteristic. Well, Genji's is his nose. You know, he's got this nose that looks like somebody's hit him with a ball pin hammer.
Oh, no.
Square.
No.
The square. And his chin is square. His profile is unique. But he's looking straight at me, and I'm going, who is this guy? I think I've seen him before.
I'm not touching that. I am not touching that.
Well, you know, we all have body parts we wish we did.
I'm not touching that either. Let's get to the show on this.
Don't be touching body parts.
On this week's show, we've got a chat with Isaac Ikuma of Fox Sports Japan. And we're going to discuss the Golden Gloves, some free agents, and MVPs. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
Wow, today is my trivia question day, which I'm sure you'll all be happy to hear. And, you know, I was thinking about the Golden Gloves this year, and when I was doing my Golden Glove ballot, let me explain how the Golden Gloves work very briefly. You get a...
Yeah, and they say Golden Glove in Japan, but we usually say Gold Glove in the States. I don't know why it turns golden here, but...
Well, they are golden. You know, they're made out of gold. Well, they're covered with gold, which they go to a lot of effort to show you if you go to the presentation in December. So the Golden Gloves, I was looking at the Golden Gloves, and I was thinking a lot about pitching Golden Gloves because... What they do with the ballot is they basically put players on the ballot who play enough games at each position.
Right.
Or they're relief pitchers. So we get Golden Gloves going to Takuya Sao a few years ago, which was kind of interesting. I think he fielded like six balls all year.
Yeah, maybe.
So it was kind of interesting to me. So I thought, what can we do with the fielding Golden Gloves? And afterwards, I got to thinking about why did Chihiro Kaneko win a Golden Glove? I'll spoil – that's a spoiler alert for anybody who's not up on last week's news.
Right.
And I'm thinking, wow, you know, when I looked at the fielding numbers I ran, which was how often does this – how what percentage of the team's balls in play behind him?
Mm-hmm.
What percentage does he get to? And what percentage of bunts are successful or result in a sacrifice hit?
Mm-hmm. You mean a sacrifice bunt or
the batter reaching base?
It turns into a hit. Okay.
How many times does he either retire the batter without a sacrifice in terms of a force, or how many times does the batter reach base on an error or a fielder's choice or hit or whatever. And Kaneko, it seems, basically was Mr. Safety First. Meaning? He was a safety driver on the mound.
In Japan, they say safety driver, which means
he's a safety driver.
He allowed the guys to go to second. He just wanted to make sure he got that one out.
He got the out. That's my impression of Kaneko, and I guess we'll get into that a little bit later. But I was thinking, goodness me, he wasn't my choice for Golden Glove. But I was curious. So today's question is related to this, which is, who's the toughest pitcher to bunt on in Japan?
Now, not particularly his pitches, but
no,
once,
not
you,
his
once
pitches,
you get the
but,
ball down, this guy
right,
gets off
right.
the mound
you,
and makes
get,
a play at second base.
If he's the one who fields it, you're in the most trouble.
That's an excellent question. And this is now, I'm going to ask this question then. Is
What's
this
the
based
question?
On the number of attempts or the number of times that he threw a guy out at second, at another base?
Well,
other
that,
than first base?
I can't look through the box scores, aren't a magic mirror. I can't look into the box score and see the whole play from my database, but I can look at the number of bunts that the pitcher fields,
mm-hmm.
and I can see how many times that resulted in a sacrifice hit being awarded, how many times that resulted in the runner reaching base safely with or without a sacrifice hit.
Okay. I just want to know how you...
So if the guy's bunting and he's not getting a sacrifice hit or reaching base, then that's a success for the pitcher.
Right.
That's a good question. And it's always hard because we're not talking about large numbers, which is why this is kind of meaningless trivia. As opposed
Isn't
to
it all meaningless?
trivia. And, of course, the other part of this is there may be some – although I can't imagine there's any pitcher in Japan that a manager would say, you know, that guy's really good to bunt on. Let's not bunt on him.
Right.
I don't think that guy exists. It's like, he's really tough. Let's get him down.
You know, and you know I like to watch a lot of games, and I like to see who's aggressive. And in my mind, I see a number of pitchers who are really aggressive and who go after those outs, but I don't know that they're the guys, so I'm going to take a wild guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to say Minoru Iwata of Hanshin.
You know, Minoru Iwata, that's a really interesting answer. and I'll tell you why we get to that a little bit later, but that's a really interesting answer. And it's not exactly right, but...
But then it's not exactly wrong then.
No, it's not. It's not. It's a great answer for sort of the other reason, which is aggressive and being really good. Actually, the guy who came out number one
mm-hmm.
was only bunted on 11 times, was Hiroshi Urano of the Fighters.
Oh. Hmm.
Now, he was bunted on 11 times, and 8 times... They got a sacrifice 3 times. They did not get a successful result.
Right. Either the lead runner was out.
They didn't get a sacrifice or the lead runner was out, basically.
Okay.
And the guy didn't reach base.
It was unsuccessful. Okay.
Okay. So just a little honor roll then. I'll just throw this out there. Would be the guys who are really tough to bunt on.
Mm-hmm.
Kenichi Nakata.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Kanotake.
Kanotake.
Well, Kenny Nakata did allow a runner to reach on a bunt, but his percentage was pretty good. Jason Standridge, Daichi Osera, Norimoto. Tomoyuki Sugano, who was my choice for the Seals, Golden Glove. So, okay, so those are the guys. And Kaneko was a zero. Now, safety first, they tried to bunt on him. Basically, he fielded 12 bunts.
Mm-hmm.
11 of them resulted in a sacrifice hit, and the other one reached base.
Yeah,
so he's a zero. Although he's not the worst. I have to give the award to the easiest pitcher to bunt on in Japan.
The award
to his teammate, Brandon Dixon.
Brandon Dixon. Okay.
You know, his body's about the size of a city block, and it takes a lot to unfold and move around. So that's not surprising. He had three. He was bunted on 12 times, 9 sacrifices, and 3 times the runner reached safely.
Mm. So why was Iwata a good, an interesting answer?
Well, what Iwata does is everything. First of all, Iwata has an amazing number of outs. When Iwata pitches, 15% of the outs in play, he starts.
Wow. So
it's like having a shortstop. It's like having a shortstop on the mound.
Right. Yeah,
it's
amazing. I just know that he's really aggressive. Like any balls that are near him, he's trying to catch them. He's running to first. A lot of times you see pitchers barely getting the first to cover, and Iwata is one of the guys who's maybe 3 or 4 steps in front of the runner because as soon as he lets the ball go and he sees it's to the right side, he bolts to first. So that was my image of him. And also he liked, it seemed to me that he likes to go after that lead runner.
Mm.
And he'll take a chance. I think he even did it in the Japan series, and they ended up having a runner reach third. So
They bunted on him 10 times. But the thing is, 15.3% of the balls in play against him, he handled. He started the play. The ball was hit to him.
Wow.
So he grabbed it. He's a vacuum cleaner out there.
He's so, all over the place.
Now, because he did have a – he did allow a runner to reach safely on a bunt, and he did make another error on a different play where he was not throwing the ball, where he was not involved on a fielding play.
Mm-hmm.
Starting a fielding play, he doesn't rate quite as highly, but okay. Yeah, really interesting choice.
All
right. Great observation, I think, on your part there.
Thank you, sir. All right, let's get to our interview this week. Not a player. This is a dugout reporter, and Isaac Ikuma, who's half Japanese and half Canadian, mm-hmm. Spent a long time, and I think he said he was born in Japan, and then he moved out to Toronto or somewhere in Canada, but I think Toronto is where he has lived the longest. And, you know, when I saw him first, the first time I bumped into him was at Chiba, and mm-hmm. that's where he does most of his work, is out at Chiba. And so if you see him on, he's at Ikuma Isaac, and that's I-K-U-M-A, and then Isaac, the traditional spelling. You'll see him a lot on TV out at the Chiba Lotte Marines games. And then, so anyway, I didn't know he could speak English really well, and I didn't even know he was half Japanese until I bumped into him at the QVC Marine Field, and he gave me a big hearty hello. And so we talked a little bit, and I said, hey, we have this podcast. If you want to come on sometime, let me know. And I obviously the off season is the best time to talk to these guys. So we had an opportunity, and he was kind enough to sit down, and we hit on a number of topics. So let's have a listen. All right, our guest on the show this week is Isaac Ikuma of Fox TV. He's been a dugout reporter the past 2 years for Fox TV. How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for coming on the show with us. We really appreciate your insight with the Chiba Lotte Marines.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and, you know, thanks for considering me even, you know.
Oh, great.
You've had a bunch of players on the show, and I feel like, you know, I feel honored to be on the show.
Well, the other part is, I mean, I know you do much, much more of your work in Japanese than you do in English, so this gives you an opportunity to talk about it in English.
Yeah, for a change, right? Sometimes, like, when there were live hits, when Craig Brazell would bust in, and that's when I could use my English, but otherwise it was always in Japanese. So,
right.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, big Craig. Yeah, we love Craig on the show, too. He's one of the friends of the program. All right, first question now. You spent almost every day watching the Marines at home. What were they most lacking in this 2014 season, in your opinion?
Wow. You know, I don't know if there's any one thing that you could point at, but they were kind of lacking in many areas. Not badly lacking, but just lacking in every area. But, of course, pitching was, you know, the biggest thing. You know, the three starters, especially the top three guys that Ito-san, the manager, was, you know, counting on. Naruse and Wakui, the big signing during last offseason, and Karakawa.
Yeah.
Those guys just, you know, had subpar seasons. So, you know, they were hoping to get maybe, let's say, 30 to 40 wins out of them, and they didn't even come close.
Mm.
So that was part of the problem. You know, the starting pitching struggling, I think, put a lot of stress on the bullpen. So what was a positive the previous year ended up struggling this year as well.
Mm.
Look at the hitters, too. I mean, there just wasn't that much power. It was not a lineup with a lot of power to begin with,
well,
but
yeah.
The previous year,
yeah.
You know, Sahito Iguchi had a big year. And Toshiaki Imai, he hit 325. Now, we all knew he wasn't going to hit 325 again, but, you know, he struggled. And Iguchi, I'm not sure that he is in decline, you know, even though he's almost 40.
Well, his numbers say he is.
Yeah, right? Mm. He did have a season-long injury, which he had to tough out, but he definitely struggled. So right there, that was, you know, what you penciled in as a number three hitter who's gone. By the time they got Alfredo Despina, it was maybe a little too late. You know, that was like end of July. So
right.
I think when it comes down to it, the Marines actually had the best record in September. So, you know, hopefully this will lead to something next season.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely was a disappointing season. You know, Ito-san always points to the 0-5 start. That was big for sure. It was always like trying to catch up to get back up to 500, right. Which they never were able to do after April.
Yeah, I pointed to the power early on. I said that it was going to be I assumed it was going to be an issue, but the pitching, you know, for a while the team was playing well. They were up near the top. They were in the top three at least early on, and I kept saying, you know, they're doing it with smoke and mirrors. You know, I don't know how they're getting through.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect it to last, and it lasted longer than I thought it would. And my projection for them, I don't remember what it was, but I think it was fifth or maybe even lower, sixth place.
So your projection, going into the season was
not good based on what I saw. You know, on the roster on opening day. Well, I guess we did our projections or predictions for the season way before opening day. But, I mean, you know, based on what I saw. But I thought they played well, considering. I think, you know, the skipper, Stomolito, is a former catcher, and that position was in particularly bad form this year. Now, what was the biggest problem there? Was it just because they had a rookie who didn't really know enough about the game, or was it just that we kept saying that none of them were good enough hitters to stay, and the guys who were good enough catchers to stay couldn't hit.
Right. Well, I think the catcher position for the Marines has sort of, they've tried to be in rebuilding mode the last few years. You know, obviously that became a priority when Ito-san became the skipper, you know, being the former catcher that he is. You know, obviously he wanted to find a replacement for Tomoya Satozaki, who retired.
Yeah.
And,
well, he was injured.
I think.
Yeah, Satozaki had been injured for a while, right?
Injured all year. And it always seemed like even the previous year, you know, they would try the young Emira or Tanara, and, you know, they just weren't sort of getting the flow of the game, and they would have to end up going back to Satozaki, but he would get hurt. So that's why they drafted Yoshida, right, in the second round.
Right.
He's a good player. He's got a good body. You know, he's a good hitter. But, again, I think, like you say, maybe they rushed him a little too much. The fact that Ito-san is a former catcher, I think, adds to more pressure for the catchers. That you know, he expects a lot from the catchers. It's not just receive the ball, you know, look at the dugout for the sign. You know, he wants his catchers to call their own game, and you know that tends to be the case in Japan a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But when you have Yoshida, you know, who's right out of college, you know, apparently what I heard was by May, when he was getting sent down, he was sort of just in panic mode, you know, in his head, that he would second guess himself after every pitch that he would call, kind of handcuffing himself. So then, you know, second half of the season, they tried a combination of Tamara and Emira. Tamara seems like he's a smart kid, you know, and he calls a good game. But again, like you say, they're not the greatest hitters yet. So this is going to be a position that for sure, they're going to have to find a catcher, whether it's going to be Yoshida or Tanara, you know, we'll see what happens. But they do need to find the heir apparent to Satozaki for sure.
Okay. Well, I know Craig Brazell and Seth Greisinger are not coming back. I saw that recently, I think last week in the news. So do you see the team adding like a free agent hurler? I know Kaneko is probably going to be available. Or are they going to try to import some power from overseas? What do you see their moves being in the offseason here?
Well, you know, I don't have any inside information as far as, you know, who are they targeting, but...
Oh, come on, man. Sure. That's why we put you on the show.
You know, I'll come back on the show when I have more off-the-record information to share with you.
Okay.
I know that their number one target is Alfredo Despina, or Despain, you know, as pronounced in English. I know that they're going to target him for sure. The biggest thing about going out to Cuba last year for the Marines front office was that they've created this sort of pipeline. And so now, you know, even if they are not able to get Alfredo Despain, you know, maybe they have their eyes on a pitcher. I know there's a young bunch of young pitchers in Cuba. There's also other position players. I know that they've adjusted the Cuban season so these players can come over here and join the Japanese league from the beginning of the season. So my guess is they're going to be looking at some Cuban players. I think Luis Cruz is probably coming back, although they drafted their number one pick was a college infielder who I think is going to play second base. So I'm not sure. Maybe that reduces the chances of Luis coming back. Who knows? Carlos Rosa will be coming back, but you're right. Right now, they're going to have to fill the roster with, you know, at least three or four foreigners. Chad Huffman is probably going to come back. That's my guess.
Okay.
You know, if he plays every day, I think he could be a contributor. But, you know, again, in his case, he tried out, right? So maybe they weren't sort of, he wasn't on sort of on the top of the list as far as who to try out, you know, and give playing time to.
Right. Understood. All right. Now, one of the big question marks during the season was Yoshihisa Naruse and his up and down, mostly down performance.
Mm, yeah.
And I know he's already filed for free agency and he's probably going to be leaving the team, but do you think he's still going to be a productive pitcher from what you saw this year of him?
Well, you know, he's still 28, right? And he's a finesse pitcher. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that in any way is he physically in decline. Although early in his season, early in his career, he had some amazing seasons.
Yes, he did.
Sort of what everyone is thinking about, right? Mm-hmm. Are they, you know, they're thinking, can he pitch like that? But then at the same time, when, you know, we went through that sort of dead ball period, mm-hmm. 2011, 2012, he had down seasons there. So, you know, you wonder if, you know, he's a high school pitcher who pitched a lot, came into the pros, started pitching right away. Even if he's a finesse style pitcher, he has had shoulder tendonitis. I think his elbow's fine, but you do worry about his health a little bit. And so I wonder if it's a sign of decline or is it just that he had a few down seasons? The rumors are that he's going to the Swallows, right? That could be a tough place for him to pitch.
It's a bad fit. But see, that
it's not a good fit. I mean, yeah. He's had bad outings there for sure. If he goes to Koshien as his home stadium, plays with the Tigers, you know, that would be a good fit. But either way, I know Marines fans, who are sort of in Naruse's corner, have been in his corner. Loyal fans are disappointed to see him go. But, you know, if you look at it realistically, I think it's an okay decision. Sure, you know, it'd be great to have him back, but, you know, the team could spend money and resources in other areas. I think that it's okay to move on.
Yeah, I know it's, I mean, he's moving on. I hope he gets a better fit than Jingu Stadium. But then again, he stays down in the zone, so maybe he might be able to work his way through that. I just look at the Swallows, and they need anybody who can throw. So I think they're just, you know, just looking at somebody who can
hitters,
get
the right? They just need the pitchers.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's talk about the Pacific League MVP. Now, who would be the person if you had a vote? I don't know if you have a vote or not, and you don't have to tell me if you don't.
I do not. Do you have a vote?
Yes, I was eligible to vote, yeah. Who was their MVP for the Pacific League this year?
Well, you know, obviously you got to look at the top two or three teams, right? And, you know, with the Hawks, for example, it was a pretty democratic effort, pitching staff-wise, hitters-wise. Although, you know, you look at Yuki Yanagita and the season he had and say, wow, like this guy, maybe he's not getting the MVP this year. But, you know, an OPS over 900, what is his on-base percentage over 400? That's sick, you know, 33 stolen bases. He's a specimen.
Yeah.
I love watching him. He's probably not going to get it this year, but he may have some seasons coming up. You know, you look at the Buffaloes, and, you know, you look at Yoshio Itoi, and his numbers are just ridiculous.
That's,
you know,
swing.
He had a bunch of injuries that he dealt with. He played 140 games, which is very impressive. But I think, and you know, I know it's sort of the Japanese thing is pitchers tend to get the MVP a lot in the States. I know they like to give it to position players because they play every day.
Right.
But I think in this case, it's Chihiro Kaneko. I think it's going to be him, and I would vote for him as well if I had a vote. I mean, what was he, 16-5?
Yeah, yes.
But 11 games over 500.
And he just missed the strikeout title because Norimoto got it, I think, 2 days or 1 day before the last game of the season. So, yeah.
Right. He's just so dominant, right? I'm really looking forward to seeing him pitch at the USA-Japan All-Star Series just to see how he matches up with the major league hitters. But Kaneko is an unbelievable pitcher. He deserved it last year, but of course, you know, Makan was here. So I think it's going to be Kaneko in the Pacific League.
Well, that's interesting that you say it has to come from the top three teams, because it looks like most of the media in Japan, they don't vote for anyone except the player from the top team, unless it's someone like Coco Ballantyne, who last year set a big record. So, but right. Jim and I, we always complain, and we're not necessarily married to that scenario. And for me personally, I like a guy who helps you win games. Because I know that on teams that's the biggest thing, you know, they want to set the game in a situation where they can have their best player at the plate. And if that guy comes through, then that's what you really call an MVP, because everybody worked hard to get that guy the bat and he came through. So, Yanagita is the guy for me, because he did so much. He did so much. He didn't just, play an important position, in playing center field. He didn't just steal a bunch of bases. He got on a lot. They moved him to the leadoff spot. He did great work from that aspect. And then he hit a lot of home runs earlier in the season, but when they put him in the leadoff spot, he did that job. He got on base and yeah, he really helped propel that team, even though it lost a bunch of games at the end of the season. But, one last question then, what about the top rookie, for the Pacific League?
Yeah, and this is going to sound like I'm biased, but I think this is going to be basically a one-man race here, and it's going to be Ayumu Ishikawa of the Marines.
I'm with you.
right? He, you know, he had the 10 wins, his ERA in the 340s. I mean, he did everything he was asked to do, basically, and more. And, you know, there's a reason why the Yomiuri Giants went after him in the draft previously, because, I mean, they were hoping to get him and then slot him in as maybe the number four starter in their rotation. Well, for the Marines, I think they were hoping he would become, say, the number four starter, except by the end of the season, he was, well, actually by May, he was sort of like the de facto ace of the draft.
You say May, I say April.
But, you know, like, the guy, seriously, he barely missed any starts. He was consistent. He didn't walk a lot of guys. And, you know, he was just so cool. Maybe it's just that he's 26 years old. He's just a little more mature. But he was, you know, even his very first start, you know, in March, I guess, he was so cool about it the whole time. And so this is a guy, you know, maybe not the highest ceiling, but going forward, I think the Marines got themselves a good number two or three starter for the next 5 to 10 years. But in the Pacific League, you know, I also want to give credit to Takahashi of the Lions. I know he's not a first-year player, but he's eligible, and he had 29 saves. He was very dominant. The one thing I will say that, you know, they weren't really in contention, so maybe. But, you know, again, yeah, it is harder for a first-year player or a young player to be a starter and log a lot of innings. So I definitely think it's Ishikawa, though.
Yeah, Tomomi.
Takahashi, yeah.
Takahashi, the little left-hander with all the speed. But, yeah, he didn't get a lot of innings in, but he did his job. He did what they asked him to do, and he did it really well for a young pitcher. So I'm impressed. So that's a good name. All right, man, we really appreciate it. It's great to talk to you. Thanks for giving us some insight on the Marines, and love to have you back on the show again. So stay in touch.
Yeah, and I'll stay out of trouble, too. Thank you.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. Have a good off-season.
Well, thank you, Isaac.
Yeah, Isaac, thank you very much for taking the time. You know, this is a long interview, and it turned into a long chat, but it was really nice to sit down with him and get his insight on the Marines. And having spent that much time with that team, you know, he knows the ins and outs of that.
Yeah, because, you know, part of that is that you have to, you know, doing the pregame, going to the, of course, he's an in-game reporter.
Right, the dugout reporter.
So you have to really be on top of everything from the minute the players start showing up to the park till everything's all done and the last words are spoken, you know, to stay on top of things. And Isaac really stays on top of things. And he's, you know, whenever I come to the ballpark, he's got 100 topics in his mind about the Marines.
Mm.
And he says, like, what, you know, he's rattling them off trying to guess what I'm there covering that day. And I learn more in the 5 minutes in which he's interrogating me about my research interests that day than I did in the week of preparation for the thing I'm actually going to cover.
Right.
Which was almost without exception was about the visiting team visiting the Marines, because only two of the Pacific League teams are in the Tokyo area. So if I'm going to Chiba or Cebu, it's almost because there's another team coming in, Oryx or Rakuten or the Fighters or the Hawks,
mm-hmm.
that I want to talk to those players, not exclusively, but yeah, so it's always interesting to hear him and then hear his insight into the dynamics of the team.
Yeah.
Because he gets the foreigners, he gets the Japanese, he gets the managers, he gets sees the games.
And he talks to the coaches, and sometimes the coaches more so than the managers give you a little bit mm. more detail about the players.
Yeah, coaches love to talk, and because people don't talk to them.
Exactly, they're the middle child.
yeah, exactly. They're the like they're starved for attention. Basically, they work their butts off focusing on the games, and nobody's interested in what they say unless it's the pitching coach after the game and when the pitcher does well or badly.
Mm-hmm.
So coaches tend to be really talkative about and informative and get lots of good stuff. I find the same to be true of batting practice pitchers.
Yes. Yeah, you know, you're the only guy I know who knows about some of these batting practice
pitchers. Well, that's just people you get friendly with at the ballpark. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of great guys and characters out there, and some of them will stop and talk. So.
All right, so what's the biggest thing that stood out in that conversation?
Gee, you know, that's a hard test because it's such a great volume of insight and information. I guess the first was the Marines pitching.
Mm.
Now, as you said, our view, I think both of us shared this view of the Marines and his as just lacking kind of a little bit everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Not being quite enough this and not being quite enough that. And I know you were poking on the catchers quite a bit, and it wasn't just you. It was also Steve. In Chiba, who was talking about the catchers.
Yeah, well, a number of people, but yeah, in particular, yeah, on Twitter. And
right. So that was a topic, and I think that was sort of our theme for the season for the Marines. Why are the catchers ruining the season? And
well, that wasn't not so much for me. I was worried so much, and I think I said it early on, about their power and lack thereof, and
right.
that would cost them. And yeah, it's hard to string a lot of hits together to get a run. I mean, that team needed the three hits to get a run.
Sure.
And that's really difficult to come up with a number of times throughout the season to actually generate runs. And even with that, they scored a lot of runs and they were really good early on.
They actually, yeah, their offense was actually quite good.
Yeah, it was shocking.
Yeah, just a bit. I do. At the end of the season, I'll do a win shares analysis. And for the uninitiated, win shares basically looks at the team context. You know, how many wins did this team have? And then assigns responsibility. You know, is the fielding good? It counts park effects. Are they playing in a good, you know, it counts. Do they have a lot of left-handed pitchers that skews the batting? And batting? Are they facing more right-handed hitters than left-handed hitters? Because that matters a lot. Anyway, so all, do they hit in the clutch, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, so all these things are counted in there. And the Marines' offense was actually quite good. It was better than the Buffalo, ranked better than the Buffaloes. But their pitching was scrape the bottom. It didn't scrape the bottom because if you tried to scrape the bottom, you'd have to get through the Swallows.
Yikes. Well, you can do that. You can bash on your own team.
You'd have to pry them off the bottom of the barrel first.
Yeah.
But they were close. They were buddies down there.
You guys back here again? Yeah.
So their pitching and defense was almost as bad as Yak Pool's. And of course, it didn't look that way because A, they play in the Pacific League, which is a pitcher's league.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, exactly.
Swamps are in Jingu. So. But no, they were pretty horrid. And Isaac said that, and absolutely right on. So that was the big thing, and I guess the bit about the starting pitchers not being there. Well, should I be rude and say, well, duh, like Wakui? Well, let's get Wakui and promise him that he'll be a starter, and let's see if that'll work out. Yeah. It worked out about three times last year.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I don't know what was behind that move, and you don't either, probably.
Nope.
But you can't really expect that to work out.
No.
If that's your plan A, I don't even want to look at your plan B.
Yeah, that's the Santa Claus bit, you know. Yeah, maybe if we're nice to him, Santa Claus will leave us something, you know, leave us a present. Unfortunately, Christmas comes after the season.
Yeah. Way after. All right. Enough Walkie bashing.
For tonight. Okay.
You know, the one thing that stuck out for me as we were talking, and he mentioned the fact that he thought that the MVP of the league had to come from one of the top 1 to 2 or 3 teams. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not sure, and I said that to him. I said, obviously, that's not always the case, and that's not the mindset I have. But, of course, I want the team to win games. And and that being an MVP is coming through for your team to help win those games. And so, obviously, right. If you're going to win, you're going to be in the top three probably. Mm. But, you know, last year we saw Coco Ballantyne set a record, and this year we saw Tetsuto Yamato set a right-handed Japanese player record in the Central League. And I thought both of those guys should be MVP candidates. And I'm not sure where Tetsuto Yamato is going to finish in the voting or if he got even any consideration. And I guess we'll see soon. But that MVP thing, I think it's a real issue for the Japanese media, and I don't know.
Oh yeah.
I don't know what we can do to. I think maybe Isaac is one of the guys we can use to help change that thinking. And that's exactly what I thought when he said that. I thought, oh, that's right. You are accepted. You are part of the Japanese media. You can do this for us. You can be that conduit,
the Jedi of rationalism.
Right, the conduit through which we can actually make change. And so that was the thing, and that's what I'm gonna try to do with Isaac. I'll sit him down and say, look, you've got to change. You got to change the mindset. You know, we've got to get some different thinking in here. This thinking now, it's from back in the 60s.
Well, he's 70s. Got it. You know, I mean, when I listened to his analysis, I thought, wow, he is on it.
He definitely
knows what's going on. He is he's aware of how people think of the game in different ways. You know, he's not just out there slinging BS.
Yeah.
So you have to do a little bit of that with players sometimes, because that's very often the language most players are speaking into the media. And I don't mean it that the players are just doing that, but, you know, it's a defense mechanism for the players. You know, because I had the hit because I really wanted to have a hit. Every player who gets a winning hit, an RBI single, a big RBI single in a winning game, will be quoted as saying, we'll give a quote to the team's PR guy that says, well, in that situation, we really needed to win. And whatever it took, I was going to bring that runner home.
Right.
So in other words, if they weren't in a position to win and it didn't really matter, he wouldn't care, or the other batters didn't really want to bring that runner home. So, it's just like when you think about it, you think, what a load of baloney.
Yeah.
So, and Isaac will take that in, and translate that into real human language, into what this guy would say if he wasn't talking to the media about something, how his work day went.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. So again, you can follow Isaac at IKUMA and then Isaac, the traditional spelling on Twitter. And he tweets in Japanese. So if you can speak Japanese, I invite you to go ahead and follow him. And even if you can't, he tweets out some interesting photos all the time. So
sure.
You can follow him that way. But thanks again, Isaac. And we'll be seeing you soon, hopefully.
Thank you, Isaac, and look forward to that always. I know you've got a busy off season, so it's hard. You know, we need a leash on this guy.
All right, let's talk about the Gold Gloves now. They were awarded this past week. 4 Oryx players led the way, and my man Yoshio Itoi of the Oryx Buffaloes got his 6th consecutive.
Straight.
Yeah,
6th career and 6th straight. What a shock there. That's an upset.
But yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if he really deserved a Gold Glove for his work this year, especially because he spent a lot of the second half injured. He had a bad wheel, and he just really never looked like himself, especially in the playoffs. He was awful. But you can't judge a guy on 1 month, but I don't know that he was a Gold Glove guy, but oh well. I'm curious about how you feel about the selections, because I didn't really know where to start looking at all the defense in both leagues. I'm satisfied that the media peeps, they just love home runs and they hate errors. I think that's, to oversimplify it, I think that's what's happening here. Because
they look for those safety drivers.
Safety drivers. I don't know. Takahiro Okada getting a gold glove. I mean, what's the world coming to?
I mean, like,
what's the world coming to, honestly?
I have to agree with that. I have to think, and I can think of a couple of games. I watched a series, an Oryx series, in the middle of the season in which Okada looked like nobody told him he was supposed to stop the ball. or what to do with it when he caught it.
Or, you know, the Alex.
He would have been acceptable playing on the Little League World Series team.
So, that is mean.
But he had that kind of a week, and I just when I saw the election, I had to keep from regurgitating some of those horrors.
Well, that happened there for me, but then when I couldn't hold it back was when I saw Masahiko Morino gotten a gold glove, and I'm thinking, there's a reason the guy has played 18 years and no one's ever thought of him as a gold glove player.
Well, and the reason, and of course, and he said this, and I thought it was well done, and he said this was, of course, the reason nobody ever thought of him as a gold glove winner, although I think you and I both know, he's got the goods, but he just doesn't bring them often enough. You know, I think it's his concentration of balls hit, you know, hard hit balls that he loses a lot. But in terms of winning a gold glove, deserving a gold glove, he played a lot more. I think Jose Lopez is probably the best in Japan.
Definitely.
Right now.
At first base, yeah.
But Morino played every day, and he's a third baseman. So the real reason he hasn't won a gold glove, I think if he had played all of his career at first, and he was more used to it, his athleticism and the sort of the low bar.
Be careful now. Don't call it athleticism. That's an affront to everyone who is an actual athlete.
Oh man, that's bad, because he's basically a former middle infielder.
Right, and they played him a few games there this past season. They played him a number of games.
He played a lot at second base, and he didn't kill him.
He did not.
No, but, which is the shock, because we thought that was the cyanide pill. You know, if your season's going really badly, like Moreno at second base.
Yeah, because it can't get any worse than that.
But I voted him. I voted for him for a Golden Glove at first base because Lopez was better, but he didn't play enough, and because they were constantly testing out Shinosuke Abe at first base. And trying everybody else as they do.
Morino, he had a lot of putouts. He had a lot of assists. And I guess the numbers would say that he had so many chances it didn't screw the whole thing up.
Correct.
That he should be a gold glove. But
their defense is good, and he was one of the more effective players in their defense in the infield. So he gets
credit. I hear
you
chuckling as you say that.
No, I'm not.
I thought I heard some.
I gave him a vote for very reasoned analysis, but I could have, you know, if I thought about it and saw, well, Jose Lopez played, you know, a third as much and was just a fraction behind him.
Mm-hmm.
I probably should have gone with Lopez, because that's my thinking in general. But I was in a rush, and I kind of, you know, in second thought I would have made Lopez given him his second vote in 2 years, but I didn't.
Right,
probably a mistake, but I contributed to the Masahiko Morino award. But he was good. I mean, it's not silly. It's not like giving it to Takahiro Okada. Which is silly. You have an option, which is none of the above.
Yeah.
And the first base for the Pacific League was none of the above.
It certainly was. And well, it certainly wasn't. Takahiro.
Well, he was the best. He was the best in
Okada.
A bad league.
Yeah.
And I'll say that. I mean, it was a bad league for first baseman.
Yeah.
The guy who was actually – who did get some votes probably – was Ernesto Mejia. I think he got 3 votes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, but he's not really much better than he is. I think he's better than Okada, but not much.
Yeah, you know.
This is a guy who was the excuse for him never playing in Atlanta, the guy in front of him was really, really good, was that he couldn't play defense.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
If you say so. And I mean, I did see some situations where a better fielder would have made some plays, but some of those things are 50-50, and the really good players make those plays. And
he doesn't quite have, you know, he's not the, when it comes to making plays, he's not, I think he's been a DH a lot, you know, in the farm system or something, but he didn't look all that comfortable on some plays, and he and Cebu infielding coach Hiroshi Narahara and I talked about that one day, mm-hmm. in which we were talking about a play that he didn't make the night before against Oryx that killed him. You know, when he went to try the tricky out instead of getting the easy out,
mm-hmm.
and that game he had exactly the same play and he made the good out. He made the good play and they won.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's a one play sample of the season, and right. I wouldn't base a Gold Glove
right.
award on that. But, that was an issue with him.
Yeah, of course.
Judge balls.
Yeah, I was really happy to see Hikaru Ito of the Oryx Buffaloes get the Gold Glove at catcher, and I was happy for him. But when I looked at some of the numbers, he had a lot of. It seems like he did a lot. But the thing that I saw on TV was that when he's behind the plate, mm-hmm. The Oryx Buffaloes pitchers have a really lower ERA than their overall average ERA.
Mm.
So that he makes a difference apparently behind the plate somehow.
Well, that's kind of an interesting number. I don't have the actual games they catch because I'm not diligent enough to count them all.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't really say that. I used to do that in the past, and I know there is a big difference. There can be a big difference, but you know, here's the other thing: is in the current research in that's going on in the States is, you know, while these gaps occur,
mm-hmm.
they tend not to be sustainable. Now, I'm going to argue in Japan that they're more sustainable, but that's just sort of the BS slinging a little bit. That's just my gut feeling and not really a reasoned assessment. But my vote went to Sumitani basically because nobody tried to steal on him.
Yeah, I was going to say Ito was probably a good choice, but I think Sumitani was really one of the better defensive players, if not the best defensive player all around in Japan or in the Pacific League for sure. But, you know, compare him. I think he's comparable to Abe behind the plate in terms of his throwing. He makes some errors throwing the ball. And I think when you see, he had six errors, and I would imagine at least four of them were probably throwing because he'll throw a high ball to second base when a guy's trying to steal. But again, that's why I said I think the media, they love homers and they hate errors, and I think he didn't get it because he had more errors. Simple. And you know, Ito had three and he had six, and that's it. That's how they decide.
Well, I had him rated overall with a lot of different things. For example, how many assists he had on pitches that weren't strikeouts,
mm-hmm.
and you know his fielding percentage, but his efforts throwing out base runners was quite good. I mean, he's probably the best overall package in Japan.
Hmm. Interesting.
Abe would if he caught every day.
Probably, yeah.
Although the guy I voted for in the Pacific, in the Central League, I'm probably the only one, was Toshiki Kurobane of the Bay Stars.
Yeah, and I noticed that he had a lot of putouts or a lot of, compared to the, I mean, considering he didn't play in a lot of games.
Mm, right.
That was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got a lot of credit for that. You know, and he was competent against base stealers. And this is a guy who didn't play a lot of games, but probably is, you know, he's going to be the gold. He's probably going to be the Central League Gold Glove winner.
Yeah.
As soon as people remember his name.
That, or you know, if he starts to hit, you know, I think a lot of it is with all the Yokohama Bay Stars catchers is who's going to actually bring a bat to the game. Consistently.
Well, Takajo has always been the guy who, you know, who can do that, but his defense is either, you know, he's got the defense on, defense off switch.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the guy whose defense is on all the time, and that's Ryosuke Kikuchi of the Hiroshima Carp. And
I knew you were going to mention that.
I love this guy. Because you know I love him.
We all love him, and the voters loved him too. We had some really strange votes in the Golden Glove. I mean, Abe won the Golden Glove for catcher, and almost as many people said nobody was worthy.
Yeah, 96 voted for Abe and 94 said none of the above.
Right. So, but with Kikuchi, it was a landslide. First of all, there were no abstentions. Everybody voted for somebody at second base in the Central League. Everybody who voted for the Central League, you don't have to vote for both leagues. Everybody who voted for the Central League voted for a player, and all but 8 chose Kikuchi. And I'm surprised at those.
Give me their names. I want their names and I want their affiliations. I'm going to their. I mean, this guy had the most out. He had the most putouts in Japan, right?
Yeah, second straight. Yeah, he rewrote the record for chances.
Yeah,
by a second baseman. He set it last year. He set the Central League record last year, and he extended it this year.
Incredible defensive player. He gets to a lot of balls. He goes left. He goes right.
He goes back. Outfield. Especially goes back.
Yeah, just amazing.
He's incredibly gifted. I'm trying to remember. I guess it was a Tanishige who compared him to a greyhound.
Hmm.
And he's incredibly gifted, and he is very, very smart. Nobody is in a better place to field everything. I mean, it's like, oh, the second baseman can't. Oh, there's Kikuchi. What's he doing over there?
Yep.
It's that kind of thinking. Okay, as for the other 8 votes, five people probably hadn't voted in a long time or seen a game in a long time, and they voted for my buddy Masahiro Araki.
No.
And 3 voted for Tetsuto Yamada. Because he has a bat.
Because
he can hit. Yamada is a former shortstop, and physically, in terms of getting to the ball, he's actually very good. But he doesn't have a shortstop's arm, and he always seems to be wanting to take the ball to the other side of second base before he throws it. Before he looks comfortable. He doesn't quite look that comfortable at second base yet.
Yeah.
And he's really not that good. But nobody in Japan is as good as Kikuchi is at his position. There's nobody who towers over his position like Kikuchi does. So
yeah, and this is a guy, he hit 325 this past season. So I think the major leagues are really going to be looking at him quite soon. And the Carp, if they're going to win, they need to do it in the next 3 years, because I think he'll be scooped up by a major league team.
He's not going to get any better. He's not going to get any better probably than he is right now, which means, this is, you're seeing him at the best. What happens, defensive players usually by the time, after a couple of years they've been in the season, if they're 23 years old, they're not as good at 24 or 25. They'll do some smarter things.
Mm-hmm.
But physically and in terms of his adjustments to the game, I mean, he'll continue to make adjustments, but he's going to be losing a little here and there from now on. So now's the time to get him.
All right. Let's talk about the free agents real quick and then hit our notes for MVP and then get out of here. Mm-hmm. Free agents, some people to look for now. I know Daisuke Matsuzaka is, I guess, SoftBank and Hanshin and some other teams are interested in him. Hiroyuki Nakajima, the former Seibu Lions shortstop, is out there. Kyuji Fujikawa, these are the guys who are playing in the States for right now.
Mm-hmm.
Kyuji Fujikawa from the Chicago Cubs is available. Ichiro Suzuki still hasn't been procured by any particular team. And Norichika Aoki, we expect him to return to the Kansas City Royals, but who knows, he might be available. So do you expect any of these guys to come back from the States?
Back to the Future. No.
Not one.
I see you crossed. You had Wada on the list, but crossed off because he's resigned. The Cubs have picked up his option.
Right.
No, Suzuki, no, absolutely not, because he intends to play in the majors. I he ever intends to play in Japan again.
Yeah, I
think Aoki's the same. I think he's a wanted man. Kyuji Fujikawa, I think, will stay in the States because I think somebody will be interested in his splitter. Nakajima.
Yeah, some batters.
Yeah, a lot of them are batters. Wait for the fastball. Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Gave up on the splitter. Here we go.
Mm.
Yeah, usually when batters see the splitter, they go, wow, it looks like a fastball. Now they see fastballs. Good. You know, this looks like a splitter, but I think it's a fastball.
Right.
Okay. Nakajima, I don't think so. The guy I think we may see back is Kensuke Tanaka.
Hmm. Didn't put him on my list. Yeah, that's true.
There was talk about that because he's now in Red Rock in AAA with the Texas Rangers.
Mm. I was thinking, because I've heard the rumors with Daisuke, and obviously Hiroyuki Nakajima didn't even get a drink, didn't get a cup of coffee up in the big team.
Never
side.
Played. Never so, stood, of course, stood on
injuries,
the field.
Yeah, injuries were this major issue. A major issue with him, but I think...
Yeah, whereas Tanaka actually showed he could play.
Yeah. Had a hit in San Francisco, I remember.
He did as an outfielder, right, because he suddenly became an outfielder. But he could play. He just... that's a tough transition, as we spoke to before. And I think coming back, I think Matsuzaka is the talk because that's Son Masayoshi saying, hey, this guy was a star in Japan. Let's bring him back and hope somebody will be fooled into buying a ticket.
Yikes.
Because when Matsui announced he's retiring, Son said, let's get him.
Yeah, you know where I'd like to see Daisuke come back is, I don't remember if he was born there or not. Maybe you remember. Come back and play at Yokohama.
Well, he went to high
school. I know he went to high school in Yokohama.
Yeah. He's a Naruse.
Or something.
He went to Yokohama High School like Naruse and was from Tokyo, I believe, like Naruse. All his parents, his family is from Hokkaido originally. But the Tigers also are interested there. Tigers are interested in Nakajima.
Another guy, Munenori Kawasaki. I think, you know, he's been a fringe major league guy for a little while. I think he could probably play over there, but it'd be nice to come back, have him come back and play, like, say, like for the Swallows or somebody. Because I think he'd really be, he'd be a calming force on the infield. He'd be, obviously, you put him with Yamada, a combination like that would be really, really good for that team. Up the middle.
Well, the Swallows apparently are interested, as Isaac said, they're interested in Naruse, and they're also interested in Keiji Obiki, who declared the domestic free agency the other day.
Yeah, I saw that. And talking about some of the domestic guys, I don't know who I dislike the most because...
Well, let's lay it all, let's not beat around the bushes there.
Because I don't really think there's any good fit out there for a lot of these guys. You talked about Naruse, who declared Obiki. I don't think he's a great defensive player. He did,
and he doesn't hit.
And he did fairly well at the plate for the Fighters, but was very upset apparently about how he was used or not used in the playoffs. And part of it, I know that he had gotten injured, but I guess he felt he was physically able to play and he didn't get a chance. And
he did actually have a good. He has improved defensively for the Fighters. I think there was an adjustment. I was shocked to hear that one of my fighter sources is telling me this will be his second year in Sapporo, and we expect a little more from him. And I'm thinking he's 33 years old. What do you expect?
Where are you going to get this more?
Yeah, exactly. Where's that extra? Where was he hiding that stuff? But yes, he did settle down a bit. He was better this year than he was last year. And I think he knew it. Everybody knew it. But his best wasn't as good as what they had elsewhere.
Yeah. Other than that, I think Cam Michelio, there are rumors that he's going to be available from Hiroshima. And I guess DeNA was looking at him. And also the Yakult Swallows were looking into acquiring him. And yeah, I don't know what the best fit for him is. Probably neither one of those parks.
Well, I think he'll be fine pretty much wherever he pitches because he's in control of his stuff and he'll make adjustments. And I think that's not an issue. The other interesting one, of course, is this is going out Monday, and by the time you hear this, we'll just be a few hours away from the deadline to file for free agency.
Mm.
Now, Speaking of guys who've declared, Takashi Toritani.
Yeah, and they said he's looking to make the jump to the United States and play in the big leagues, and I'm like, I'm not seeing it.
I see him doing it.
Really?
I see him doing it, but I don't see him being successful at it for the same reason that it's a middle infield in the States is a whole different game than what's played in Japan. It's like, you know, it's like playing basketball and switching from an American court to an international court. It's like, hey, who made the court longer?
Well, I wouldn't, we saw Tsuyoshi Nishioka, not to compare the two, but just to use the middle infielder example.
That's a bad comparison. Well, because Toritani is a complete player. Okay. Nishioka is a tremendous physically talented player.
I'm just giving him as an example because we don't have a lot of examples.
Nakajima is a better comp, I think.
Well, but Nakajima didn't even make it to the major leagues. I'm just saying, a guy who's 30 something, who's a middle infielder, who's going to try to go over to the States, who's going to be a light hitting infielder. I don't see it.
Well, he's basically your.
He's a slap happy hitter who.
Well, he's a smart hitter. He's a lot. I think if you like Kawasaki, you'll love Toritani. Now, he's not as athletic as Kawasaki is, but he's a better hitter than Kawasaki is.
Definitely.
I mean, Kawasaki was pretty much almost out of a job in Japan when he went to the States.
Hmm.
So he wasn't, but he was close to being.
Hmm.
I think he could be successful. I think he's as smart as they come.
Mm-hmm.
I love Hiroyuki Nakajima, but he's not that. He's not that quick.
Yeah.
He's not that quick of a study. And I think from the adjustments I see, and it's a different, you know, I'm talking apples and oranges, but the adjustments I see Toritani make in-game and throughout the season and throughout his career, this is a guy who basically stepped out of college and became the, you know, starting shortstop and leadoff guy from opening day. And nobody said, hey, this guy's going to take some time. He looked like, yeah, I own this position. Get out of my way.
Get out of here, yeah. All right, well actually, yeah, obviously I don't think he's major league material, but we'll see.
But it's a tough precedent. Yeah. Nobody's really succeeded except Iwamura and Iguchi to some degree. So
okay, let's quickly talk about the MVPs. I think in the Pacific League, I think hands down, Isaac was talking about Chihiro Kaneko and how good he was, and he gave Yuki Yanagita of the Hawks the runner-up role, but I would reverse it, and I would give Yanagita the MVP. I think he played significant roles on the offensive side, and he was good enough in center field, which is a critical position, obviously up the middle, and when you factor the defense and the fact that he had some speed, and what he did in the batter's box as well, and then making the adjustment to play to go to the leadoff spot. I just think he is the man. But I see Japan choosing Seiichi Uchikawa just because he's Mr. Reliable, and that's who they always like when that team wins.
I think they're going to go back with I think his intuition that they might pick Kaneko is, I think, a very studied. I think that's they might go with that because. Yanagita is a great player, and I voted for Kaneko for Yanagita.
Mm-hmm.
And you know me and pitchers. It's just the way the game is right now. It's really hard for a pitcher to be as valuable as a position player.
Right.
Having said that, Kaneko was not the most valuable player who was a pitcher.
Right. Okay.
He was the most valuable as a pitcher. Okay, so I'm not going there either because the whole package wasn't good enough to beat out. My top three were Yanagita easily MVP, and then Yoshio Itoi second, and I had Young Daikon as third. And the interesting one is third and fourth were really, really close in my opinion. The next guy in line was Daichi Suzuki of the Marines, and I thought, well, their season wasn't an entire bust. He had a tremendous season. Although it was not a great MVP year either.
No, it wasn't.
It's not a great MVP year, but Yanagita was the most deserving. Itoi would be deserving as well. Kaneko, no thank you.
Yeah.
No thank you.
I would just pick two guys. I would say it's between Itoi and Yanagita, and I think because Yanagita is on the first place team. Oh, I'm sorry, yeah, Seiji Uchikawa obviously is going to get some votes because he's on the first place team. So
Itoi plays every game. He's the MVP.
All right, what about in the Central League?
In the Central League, my Central League MVP is Toritani.
Mm-hmm.
I had him second last year. I moved him up to first this year. Again, the Tigers had a tremendous, tremendous offense. They had a very good defense. And this is the guy, he was the MVP of Japan. I don't think there was any player who was better than him this year. He's not the greatest shortstop in the league. I didn't give him a Golden Glove. But his offense is just outstanding,
and
for getting on base and doing everything.
Yeah. You know, I think, first of all, I think Yosuke Kikuchi deserves the MVP, and I think the same reasons that you're saying about Toritani, except that his defense was so much more superior.
Kikuchi ain't in the same ballpark offensively with him.
Well, you know, he probably doesn't do the same things, but I mean, he hit 325, so he's hitting, and the games that he hits
for average, and he has a little pop.
Yeah, the games that I saw, he made a lot of difference in late game situations. Either he got on by a walk, by hit, or drove some guys in, and that's why. And then
the thing with Toritani, and I think it's easy to overlook, is the fact that he's not only does he look like one of the best offensive players in Japan. He does that in a park that kills him. When he goes on the, you know, when I should put together his road numbers, because you'd look at this guy and you'd think, how come I didn't notice this?
Mm. Well, you know, one of the things I didn't notice and probably didn't make mention of enough was the fact that Matt Burton had won a heck of a season, and that
he
deserves some MVP votes as well.
Yeah. Yeah, if he had been in the Pacific League, he could have been in the MVP.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean that not in a bad way, but like we said, the Pacific League was kind of a flat year for superior seasons. I mean, Toritani's season was up there, classic, kind of MVP level, but Yoshihiro Maro was the guy I had number two, and Yamada. All those three guys had better years. And this is saying that in a league that doesn't win as many games.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think the Pacific League actually is better than that. I mean, so it's a harder competition.
Right.
I mean, and this is the thing. It's a little harder to rise to the top in the Pacific League. I mean, I counted it up the other day after the Japan series that since interleague play started in 2005, the Pacific League has won 53% of the games.
Mm-hmm.
Against the Central League.
Right.
You know, they've won three quarters of the Japan series.
They've won. You did talk about it.
It's a joke almost.
Yeah.
It's almost a joke. And so, but I think that's why we see it's easier to pick out the wheat from the chaff in the Central League. It's not as tough a league.
Yeah.
So, okay.
All right. So, and like I said, I think that the Giants, Tomoyuki Sugano, and he was the consensus, when I did a little informal poll on Twitter and on the Facebook page, that he would get it because that's who the media would probably just pinhole into that, just give him that award, because it's utterly ridiculous. We know there are no repercussions when the media gets it wrong, and we need to sit down and
well, first of all, we don't know when it's wrong, because like last year, I mean, I generally think most of the votes are wrong. So I don't think there's a sense that it's ever wrong because it's so bad or it's so off the track. I mean, I thought Valentin was an obvious. I knew he was going to be an obvious choice last year, but I didn't think he was the most valuable player in the league at all.
Yeah.
I mean, he had a great season, but he had a great season in the context of, you know, he was a one man show for an offense that really wasn't that very good. But I agree with you about the MVP voting being a narrow approach to a problem.
Narrow. All right. Well, I mean, yeah,
like,
narrow-minded.
Yeah, it's pigeonholed.
Yeah, it's true. All right, we're going to get out of here. Let us know who you think is going to be the MVP in each league, and also give us your opinion. Send an email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, or you can go to the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. We'll be back talking about MVPs and other player movements and free agents and all that stuff. So enjoy your offseason.
Yeah, talk to you next time.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.